try to keep you close to me, but life got in between. Try to square, not be.
Welcome to Mondays with Millie, a podcast about the past with real relevance to the present day. I'm your host, Phil Christofaro, and in this podcast series, I interview my 90-year-old mother-in-law, Doreen, who I affectionately call Millie, about her ordinary life and the extraordinary events which influenced it. Millie has witnessed firsthand some incredible things across 10 decades. This is a personal history which gives us some perspective about life's triumphs and challenges.
We rode our bikes into the sky, but now we crawl against the tide. Those distant days are flashing by. Hold back. Let me look in your eyes. Hold back the river so I can stop for a minute and be by your side. Hold back the river, hold back. Hold back the river, let me look in your eyes. Hold back the river so I.
Welcome to this special bonus episode of Mondays with Millie. In this episode, Millie and I chat with Paul about turning 70 and a professional life spent chasing crooks with a crafty canine sidekick. Paul's so-called retirement as a professional dog trainer is his passion. Please enjoy this episode of Mondays with Millie.
Waters, lonely water, won't you let us wander? Let us hold each other, lonely water.
Hi everyone, welcome to Mondays with Millie. This is a very, very special episode today. I'm super excited because I've got a couple of people very special to me in front of me today. We've got Millie, who's a regular, obviously, the star of the show, but we've also got Paul, her eldest son, who's come back to join us today and kindly offered to give some of his time and out of his very busy schedule of dog training. We're going to talk all things dogs, policing, pretty much today. And this episode actually coincides very nicely with our 5,000th listen, Millie. We've got 5,000 listens out of the show. We're up to 29 countries, across 29 countries. That's pretty amazing stuff.
Wow.
Excellent.
How do you feel about that, Millie? What does it make you think
quite
about?
Overwhelmed, really.
Does it?
Quite unbelievable, yes.
It is quite unbelievable, isn't it? So let's jump in. Paul, if I can ask you, what drove your decision making around joining the police, and how old were you, and what year are we talking about?
Strangely enough, on Monday, it will be 51 years exactly to the day I joined the police service.
51?
51 years ago on Monday.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, and you were how old? Oh, 19.
I was 19.
Because you've just had a very big birthday, haven't you?
Yes, on Thursday just gone, I had my 70th.
70th birthday, wow. So pretty much, 19 years ago, almost to the day, you just turned 19 and you joined the police force.
Yeah, and basically it was, I'd always wanted to work with police dogs. Well, I'd always wanted to work with dogs. And I suppose I wanted to be a vet, and to be quite honest, I didn't make the necessary commitment in the early stages of school and college to get me there. So the next thing I had in my head was I need to work with animals, and so I thought, and I'd seen police dogs all around the towns, because in those days there was lots of police dogs in the service. And that was the plan. What I didn't realise was, because I was quite naive, was that it was going to take me something like 10 years before I got into a dog section. So,
but you had it in your head from almost the first day that you wanted to be a police dog handler. You wanted to work with police dogs, and that was your goal from day one.
Yeah.
So
pretty much.
How long was it before you came to the realization that it was going to take some time?
Probably the second day at training school. when the instructor, there was like 35 of us in the class, and we're all sat down there and I think they did it as a bit of fun, really, for their entertainment. They went around the class and asked everybody what their thoughts were about joining the police force and what their sort of ambitions were. And you'd got a variety of people coming in saying they wanted to be in CID. They wanted to one guy wanted to be a chief constable on day one. And they came round to me and I said, well, basically, I want to be a police dog handler. And he went, and the instructor, a guy called Sergeant Wood, burst out laughing to start with, and then said, "So you've got no ambition whatsoever, then, have you?" So I just suddenly clicked in it, and I said, "How do you mean?" And he said, "Well," he said, "it's dead man's shoes." He said, "Once you're on the dog section," he said, "that's it. You're on there for the rest of your career, usually." He said, "and you don't go anywhere." He said, "but because you don't want to go anywhere." So I said, "oh, okay." So he said, "but what you've got to remember is when I say dead men's shoes, you're going to wait a long time before you find a vacancy." And so day two. And I did consider walking out at that point, but but I'm glad I didn't.
So, Millie, what was your reaction to Paul coming and saying, "I'm going to join the police force"? Did he actually ask for your advice about it, or did he sort of tell you?
No, he didn't ask my advice. In fact, he'd got a very good job, which he'd had for a year since he left school at 18, left college at 18, working for high-class jewellers in Blackpool. And they wanted to send him to Birmingham to be trained as a silversmith, you know. And he turned them down. They were a bit put out about that and said no, he wanted to be a policeman, because in those days you had to be 19 to join the police force. So that's how he spent a year waiting to join. So I had plenty of notice, you know, but I thought he might change his mind. And of course he didn't. The thing that bothered me most was that the rule was that young policemen didn't stay in their own hometown. they had to be moved away, which meant him leaving home, and he had to go to Old Trafford in Manchester. And I wasn't very happy about that, because the digs he had were, but certainly below standard. He was always very hungry. He came home every week on his day off and stayed overnight. And he'd go back with a few extra bob in his pocket and a food parcel.
Comfort, a comfort package.
And clean washing, and clean washing, yes.
Yeah. In those days, the wages for a police officer weren't particularly good. It was before we had the big pay rises. And I think my first paycheck, my first monthly paycheck was £42.05 for a month.
£42. Wow.
That's, yeah.
And that would have been below the average wage for most people.
Yeah, it was at the time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how long did it take before you were confronted with your first wake-up call? And I mean, you know, where you thought, oh, wow, this is actually pretty serious stuff here.
I didn't have that feeling. What I had was every day was exciting, because you just didn't know what was going to happen.
You had a good mentor, didn't you, in Chris Cowley?
I did. I had a great mentor when I first joined. I got posted to Stretford in Manchester, and the guy who became my best friend, actually, and he's still my best friend, a guy called Christopher Cowley, 10 years older than me, but he was an established five-year man in the force, and I was sort of given to him after for the first 6 months, and so I worked with him, and he was a great guy, still is, and I just couldn't get into it, to be honest. I got to the point where I didn't want to go home. Mind you, at the time, I was, as Mum says, I was in some really rubbish digs, so it's no reason I didn't want to go home, because it was a bit horrendous.
Can you describe it? So you were staying with a family or something who were putting you up. Is that how it
was? I was staying with an old lady, a granddaughter and a boyfriend. And it turned out that the granddaughter had a massive crush on me. And the boyfriend was actually a burglar.
Oh, wow.
Don't forget, these places were vetted by the police. And he was told to go and stay there. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I didn't have a choice. I didn't have a choice in my digs. They told me where I was going to stay. And after about 3 months, I came home and found the burglar boyfriend unloading the boot of his car with a load of stolen radios. Immediately packed a bag, went up to the police station, told the duty sergeant what I'd found as I come home. And I spent the night in the cells, because that was the only place I could sleep. They put a bed down in the cell block for me, and I spent the night in the cells while they arrested him and the old lady.
Oh, wow. Oh, gosh. What a start. So it was exciting, but it was, you didn't want to come home because it was really not very pleasant in your digs. What was the first of your really hairy escapes?
One of my first ones, and this is strange considering I wanted to be a dog handler, was we got sent to what was classed as what they called a bonded warehouse in Old Trafford. And basically bonded warehouses were where they kept shipments of cigarettes or shipments of booze. So they were usually very, very well secured, big fences around them, and very often patrolled by dogs. And we got a call to go to this bonded warehouse with Mom. And as I got there, I got to the front gates, and the big sign on the front that said, "Beware of the dogs." And my mentor, who, as I say, was my friend. Why after this, I don't know. But he said, over the fence, mate, get down over the fence. He said, and get to the front. He said, and I'll go round the back. So I said, well, it says beware of the dogs. And he said, oh, no. I said, there's no dogs in there. He said, it's just a sign to frighten people off. So I said, okay. So I climb over this chain link fence, climb down the other side, get halfway across this massive concrete area, when all of a sudden, out of the darkness, I hear this growling, and two dogs came running towards me from the inside of the whereabouts in the compound. I'm not sure, but they came running towards me. I turned and ran like hell back towards the gate. Just managed to get onto the gates to climb over, and I'm just climbing over when one of them latched onto my left leg, and the other one latched onto my right leg. Now, fortunately, one of them had got my boot, and the other one had got my trouser leg. So I'm hanging on the fence, and Chris on the other side, my friend, is saying, he said, kick him off. So I tried to kick him off, and they wouldn't get off. So he said, loosen your belt. So I'm one-handed holding on to this thing, loosen my belt. My trousers get ripped off, one boot gets ripped off, and I clamber over the fence, feeling a bit scarred and not happy.
And with no trousers on.
And with no trousers on. So I'm stood the other side of the fence. I'm stood the right side of the fence. And Chris, my friend, is in hysterics. And he radios through to the rest of the patrols. There was on our patrol at that time, I think there was about eight of us, and to the rest of the patrols. And they all came and congregated round so they could see me standing outside these gates with no trousers on and one boot.
So, Millie, were you frightened about asking Paul stories when you saw him?
Frightened? No, some of them he didn't bother to tell me, the more serious ones. One of them came much later in his career when he transferred to Kent County. I was frightened then. And he had so many injuries, concussion. It's a wonder he's any common sense left at all. Because we just got used to them knocking on the door and saying, nothing to worry about, but Paul's in hospital with concussion.
Nothing
we
to
got,
worry
it
about.
It got to be, yeah. They always started off by saying, nothing to worry about.
Paul, do you ever get contacted by the police association or anything now about your injuries? Because you carry quite a few injuries, and you're on the waiting list to have your knees done from damage from the police.
No, they don't contact us regarding that. There's no follow up from them on that. But if I choose, because I was a member of the Police Federation as a retiree, if I have an operation and I need to go and convalesce somewhere, there is a police convalescent home that will be made available to me.
Oh wow!
But I would have to approach them rather than approach me.
Okay. So you were in the police for 10 years and you've finally got your chance to work with dogs. How did that come about?
Well, basically what happened was I went in between leaving Manchester, I transferred down to Kent and worked down there for about 8 years, and then I left the police service.
You were in the CID, weren't you, when you were in Kent?
I was in the CID down in Kent. Got quite disillusioned with things, to be honest, at the time. Money was really tight, and I'd got a young family, and it was a struggle. I decided to leave, and I came back up to Lancashire and went through a sort of a process of taking on a couple of jobs that were definitely not in my plan for life, which was working on a building site for a time to make money, and then working selling Mercedes Benz, which was absolutely rubbish at. Apart from when I was dealing with gypsies, I did really good when I was dealing with gypsies that came in to buy with cash. Yeah, I seemed to have a good rapport with them, but with the people that came in with the checkbook, I just didn't seem to gel with them the same way, some way. So that fell through, and then eventually myself and my first wife opened a business together, pet shop, and we did that for 2 or 3 years, 4 years maybe, and eventually I reapplied to get back into Lancashire Police and got posted, got accepted and got posted to Blackpool, which again, I had to do a probationary period, but this time I only had to do 12 months because of my past experience. And the chief super at the time, who I got on quite well with, he had every intention of putting me straight back onto CID because of my experience down in Kent. So when I'd done the 12 months probation, he had me in his office and said, right, he said, I've got a vacancy on CID coming up. Do you want to take it? So I said, well, no, thank you. I said, I'd like to go on the dog section. Well, he ate the roof. he just wouldn't accept that I wanted to go on the dog section.
He thought of highly of you, and he thought that maybe it was the wrong choice in terms of a career move. Is that?
I think so, yeah. It is what it is. And I kept going and saying no until probably another 12 months on, he gave in and said, had me in his office again and said, okay. And he signed the for me to go for the assessment to be a dog handler. And I never looked back from there. It was absolutely perfect for me.
How long was the training?
You go for an initial assessment. Initial assessment's a 2-week course, and it's for the instructors to look at you to see whether or not they think you've got it in you to be a dog handler, basically. So there's a lot of cleaning out of kennels and a lot of dressing up in protective gear so that dogs can bite you. You get used as a dummy a lot. And a pretty much a really enjoyable time if you're that way inclined, actually. And then once I've gone through the... I didn't have to wait long before a vacancy came up. I think at that time, Lancashire had something... I think they had 48 dog handlers at the time for the whole of the county. Maybe a few more, actually. I'm not sure. But a vacancy came up and it was offered to me. And I took it with so much joy. I couldn't believe it. And then I did the course that I took. When you go there, and your first day is all about this is your equipment. There's a lead. There's a check chain. There's a harness. There's a length of rope. turn it into a tracking line. And you had to do your own whipping, and you had to sort of whip it and whip the hook. They used to give you a hook, a piece of rope, and some whipping twine. And you had to make it yourself, part of one of the tests, actually. And then eventually they say to you, oh, and you've got a dog, it's in the kennels. And you go and they take you around, and you go and see the dog that you've been allocated. And my first dog that I was allocated was one of the best dogs I'll ever know, called Zach.
Terrifying dog to look at.
he was beautiful to look at. He wasn't terrifying.
Yeah, but he was scary, wasn't he?
He was black.
I didn't know him.
He was a big, big German Shepherd, and I remember him very, very well. And I remember going to your place in Poulton that first time and meeting Zach, and he was a bit scary when you first met him. But, yeah, beautiful, beautiful animal. Absolutely gorgeous.
He was.
I remember him well. Millie, what was going through your head when Paul came home and said, well, firstly, you're probably pretty happy when he said he was going to wind up with the pet shop and try and get back into the police, and that's the first bit. And then, obviously, getting into the dog squad, you would have been happy for him in both cases.
I was. Yes, I was. Yes. I remember the day we first met Zach. And you were halfway through training him, weren't you? You were still
came
home at weekends with him. And John and I went, and Chris and Paul said, now sit down on the settee and I'll bring him in, you see. So this dog came in and he was nose to nose with John. John was absolutely terrified. And he just got very close to him and stared at him, you know. And he was just level, you see. And I thought, John's going to have a heart attack. So I said, Paul, introduce them. I couldn't think of anything else to say. And, you know, we absolutely loved him. We really did. We loved him.
Try to keep you close to me, but life got in between. Try to square not being there, but it's there that I should have been. Hold back the river, let me look in your eyes. Hold back the river so I can stop for a minute and see where you hide. Hold back the river, hold back. Once upon a different life, we rode our bikes into the sky. But now we crawl against the tide. Those distant days are flashing by.